Hi, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Roy.
And we're going to talk about the stars we can see above Baltimore in September. This is brought to you by the UMBC Observatory.
Yep. Pandemic Podcast.
If you've listened to our past couple episodes, we talked about some of the circumpolar stars we can see from Baltimore. In particular, we've mentioned the Big Dipper a couple times. Seven bright stars, very well known. It is part of a constellation called Ursa Major. Another constellation that is circumpolar from the Baltimore area is Cassiopeia. And I think we mentioned it maybe in a previous episode, but because Cassiopeia was fairly low during the summertime months, we didn't really talk about it very much. But you can spot it as we move later and later into the autumn. So if we're looking at it, looking at the sky in early September, around 9, 10 o'clock, Cassiopeia is about as high as Ursa Major. And it's going to be more to the eastern sky in the north. So when we're looking for Cassiopeia, what kind of shape do we want to look for, Roy?
Again, we're going to look for that W or M shape. Depends on whether or not it's on its side or upside down. It can also look like an E or a 3. It's just sort of a zigzag of bright-ish stars in the northern sky. Jesse, you mentioned circumpolar stars or circumpolar constellations. Can you talk about that?
Good point. I'm not sure if we have word before, but just a quick explanation. Circumpolar, it means around the pole, and those are the stars that are visible. They're pretty interesting. They're visible all night long, every night of the year. They never rise or set. You can see them, as long as the sky is clear, you can see them every night. Now, this depends on where you are on the Earth. If you are at the equator, then there are no circumpolar stars in your sky. The entire sky changes every night. If you are looking from the North Pole, every star you see in the sky is circumpolar. So really it depends on how high in your sky the North Star is, at least in the Northern Hemisphere.
So it depends on your latitude. If you talk about the difference between the equator or the North Pole, the number of circumpolar stars or the region that is circumpolar in your nighttime sky depends on your latitude. So if we're in Baltimore, right around 39 degrees north, the Northern Star, the Pole Star, will be at about 39 degrees above the horizon. And so all of the stars that are within 39 degrees of the North Star, imagine the circle around the North Star, all the stars in that circle will just spin around the North Star and they won't rise or set.
Right, they just kind of make circular patterns around the sky throughout the year.
They circle the pole.
They circle the pole, indeed.
They're circumpolar.
And so we've mentioned a couple circumpolar constellations. We mentioned, of course, Ursa Major and Ursa Minor several times. And we just talked about Cassiopeia, which is a third circumpolar constellation visible from here in Baltimore. Another one I also like is Draco. Draco is not very bright, but it does have one moderately bright star called Thuban. And the reason I like that is because Thuban was the North Star for the Egyptians. But Draco is not very easy to see. I'm not going to be looking for it from my house, certainly. I live south of downtown Baltimore, so my northern sky is fairly washed out, and Draco is just too faint to see.
Once you've found the northern part of the sky, you could, if you'd like, just flip around and look toward the southern part of the sky, or you could try to follow the same path that we've talked about in our previous episodes, where you follow the arc of the Big Dipper's handle to a star called Arcturus that fairly bright orangish-red star in the constellation Boötes, and that gets you about halfway to the southern sky.
It's funny, we often say we follow the arc to Arcturus. Arcturus is so bright, sometimes it's easier to find Arcturus and use that to help you spot the Big Dipper, especially if you live in light-polluted conditions. Not counting the sun, Arcturus is the third brightest star in the sky, so you really are, you're not going to miss it. If you have a clear view with few clouds, you should spot Arcturus fairly easily.
In the western sky, right around 9 or 10 p.m.
Right. As we move further into September, Arcturus will be lower in the sky in the early evening, but it should be visible for the rest of the month. And of course, that can help us spot the summer triangle, which we've mentioned a couple times before. You can look at Arcturus, turn around and look straight up, and you're looking at Vega. Well, at this point, because Vega is rising earlier, it's going to be even higher in the sky. You probably don't need to turn around. If you're looking at Arcturus and you just tilt your head straight and look straight at the top of the sky, it's called the zenith, the highest point you can see. I think you should be really close to that point.
And you might remember that Vega is a part of another fun asterism, that triangle of three stars, Vega, Deneb, and Altair. Vega's in that constellation Lyra, Deneb's in Cygnus the Swan, and Altair is in Aquila the Eagle. I guess I named what all the other ones were. Lyra's a harp.
Yeah. Yeah, a liar.
Ah.
It's a liar.
Whoa.
It's a harp. It's all coming together.
Oh, my God.
So we're doing a little bit of review from what we saw last month. And the reason is because there are several interesting bright stars in the summertime sky, which we have mentioned. On the other hand, if you have light pollution in your view of the sky, which most of us do here in Maryland, then you're going to have trouble really seeing many stars at all in the southern part of your sky during a good part of autumn.
So instead what we do is we borrow from the summertime stars.
Early in the evening.
Early in the evening. And then later in the evening, we rely on our wintertime stars.
Lots of bright, well-known stars in the wintertime sky. Some of the most famous constellations in the sky. Even though the autumn sky does not have many bright stars, right now we do have Jupiter and Saturn. As we've mentioned in our previous episodes, Jupiter and Saturn, very close to each other, very, very bright, especially Jupiter. Moving more to the south as we move later into the year, around 9 o'clock, Jupiter and Saturn will be pretty close to due south.
And that'll mean that they're at their best time to view, either with the naked eye or binoculars or a telescope.
Yeah, as they move across the sky, they kind of move in an arc shape. They rise low, they get higher, and when they're due south, they're at the top of that arc, which is what we call...
culmination.
Culmination, that's right.
An object in the nighttime sky is said to culminate when it's at its highest point in the sky. For these objects, it'll be in the southern part of the sky. In addition to Jupiter and Saturn, right around 9 p.m. in early September, you'll remember that Mars rises a few hours later, so right around 11 p.m. in early September, you can expect to find Mars rising in the eastern or southeastern part of the sky. Again, you'll want to wait a few hours before Mars rises above that haze or the buildings or foliage all around you in Maryland.
Mars is not quite as bright as Jupiter, but it is a bit brighter than Saturn, so you should be able to spot it if you have a clear view of the sky.
Actually, around September the 5th, the Moon and Mars will be very close to one another in the sky. This is called a conjunction.
One interesting thing that's actually visible in the autumn sky, well, I just, let me rephrase that. When I say visible, what I mean is not visible, but if we had a very good view of the sky here in Baltimore, we would see the Andromeda Galaxy.
Late night, very early morning, like 1 or 2 a.m., the Andromeda Galaxy will be almost directly overhead. It'll replace Vega as one of the coolest things directly overhead.
Unfortunately, Vega is easy to spot. It's very bright. You can see Vega very easily. Andromeda is...
the galaxy.
Very difficult to spot.
Right.
And for that matter, the constellation, the stars of Andromeda, I guess they're moderately bright, but they're not easy to spot.
Yeah, the only way I know to think about that is I've never used the constellation Andromeda to try to find the galaxy. I've always used Cassiopeia.
In a time before light pollution, Andromeda was easily visible with the naked eye.
The Andromeda Galaxy is a galaxy that's actually pretty close to the Milky Way galaxy in the universe.
Very similar. They're like siblings in a way. We have a much better view of Andromeda than we do with the Milky Way. Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. Kind of when you're inside the Milky Way, it's hard to see the full extent of the galaxy because you have to look through the galaxy. Your view is obscured. It's like if you're in a forest, you can't see the most distant trees. But if you're in a helicopter above a forest, you can see all the trees at once.
The Andromeda Galaxy was named the Andromeda Galaxy because it's a galaxy in the constellation Andromeda.
The idea that there were other galaxies in the universe is actually a fairly new idea.
Last 100 years or so.
Yeah.
Less than that.
So people have seen Andromeda for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years. But the idea that it's a collection of stars equal or even bigger than our own collection of stars.
The Milky Way.
The Milky Way, yeah, is a new idea.
Right. For more information on that, you can look up The Great Debate.
The autumn just doesn't have that many bright stars. And so, as we mentioned, we're kind of borrowing the summertime that you see in the early evening and the wintertime you see in the late night, early morning to kind of give an interesting view of things to look for in the sky.
There is something you can look for that can get very bright, and it's actually a man-made object. It's pretty big, and it's orbiting the Earth at a few hundred miles up. This is the International Space Station. It's actually in low Earth orbit, and so it completes an orbit of the Earth around every hour and a half. And every time it goes around the Earth, the area of the Earth that it flies over changes slightly. And so every once in a while, the ISS flies right over top of Baltimore, Maryland.
And in particular, there are some very bright ones. The ISS can be, it's usually brighter than most stars, but it's not always as bright as it is this month. In particular, we have a very bright pass on September 12th, an even brighter one on September 18th. In fact, on September 18th, the ISS will be magnitude negative 3.8, which is almost as bright as Venus, and Venus is bright. So you will definitely see it if you're looking at the right time in the right place. Now, what is that time?
Looks to be around 10 minutes after 8 on September the 18th.
So it'll be, but you can see it for about 6 minutes.
And during that 6 minutes, you'll hopefully be able to see a pretty faint dot that'll get gradually brighter and brighter until it achieves that maximum brightness, which is just a little bit dimmer than Venus, which is very bright, and then it'll get dimmer and dimmer. What's actually making the ISS so bright?
The ISS is not intrinsically bright. It has no devices on it that make it bright. What we're seeing instead is the sunlight reflecting off of the ISS, and in particular, reflecting off of the large solar panels that give the ISS its electricity for its operations day-to-day.
So Jesse, how can you determine that a dot that you're seeing in the sky is an ISS transit or an ISS flare rather than just an airplane?
It's a good question. There's a few ways. Number one, the ISS starts off faint, gets bright, and gets faint again. Because that geometry you were talking about, how the mirror, as it were, of the solar panels has to line up in the correct angle to where you're standing for you to get a good view of that sunlight reflecting, you know, in a bright way. I mean, if you get an oblique view, you might see a faint pass of the ISS. But when you're looking at a bright one, it's because the sun is lined up. It's that is reflecting that light right back in your eyes, right down to your eyes, I should say. So that means that also that light changes. It gets brighter as it goes across the sky and then fainter again before it disappears.
As it moves out of this perfect alignment.
Exactly. So you're seeing it from only seeing it from the perfect angle for a few brief moments. And you're seeing it from less optimal angles, although it can still be rather bright from those less optimal angles. Another way, of course, this sounds silly, but airplanes have more than one light. So you might, when you're looking at in the sky, you see a white light going by, but often you can see the red and green lights blinking on the airplane's wings.
Right. Satellites do not have these lights, or if they do,
we can't see them now. What we're seeing is reflected sunlight. We're not seeing any light bulbs, any incandescence from the ISS itself.
If you're not sure that what you're looking at is a satellite or an airplane, if you think it's a satellite, take note of what direction you're looking and at what time you were looking, and you can look up whether or not that object that was passing overhead or passing through the sky was a satellite. Turns out that since all of these things are man-made and orbiting the Earth, the United States and other countries have a really good record of what things are up there.
They've spent a lot of money putting the ISS up there. They want to know exactly where it is at all times. The ISS is not the only visible satellite, but in terms of the bright objects in the sky, the ISS is the brightest one we can see.
And because of the orbit of the ISS, the transit on the 12th of September and the transit on the 18th of September aren't the only ones that you can see. Almost every day, there's a transit of the ISS that you can try to see. And most of them are visible to the naked eye.
Yeah, all of them in September, or at least for the middle of September, they're all negative magnitude. Negative magnitude means they're at least as bright as Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky.
It's a wintertime star, so we haven't talked about it yet.
No, we'll talk about that next month. We can mention it. We will see it later this evening.
We've told you about one pass on September the 18th that happens to be right around sunset at 10 after 8 p.m. There are other passes at 5 in the morning. There are other passes at 4:30 in the morning. We'll let you discover those on your own.
All right, so we like to wrap up, kind of review what we talked about during the show, at the end of the show. So what did we talk about today? We looked at the northern sky. We looked for the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, and Cassiopeia. Circumpolar constellations are visible all the time, although you're going to be seeing more of Cassiopeia towards the end of the month and less of the Big Dipper. We reviewed some of the summer sky, right? We looked for Arcturus again. We looked for Vega, Altair, and Deneb, the summer triangle again.
We also mentioned Arcturus.
Arcturus, of course, yes.
And then we talked about the planets that we can see tonight, Jupiter and Saturn, and then later Mars. One thing that we didn't talk about, but you might remember from a previous episode, is Venus. That'll rise pretty close to sunrise.
Yeah, near sunrise, but it's bright enough you can still see it, even though the sky might be getting fairly bright. In addition to the stars and planets we can look for, we also mentioned September is a great time for looking for the International Space Station. There'll be several particularly bright passages in the middle of the month, but really bright enough you can see it for most of the month of September.
and we'll post this information on our show notes page. We also mentioned briefly the constellation Andromeda, close to Cassiopeia in the northern sky, as well as the Andromeda Galaxy that lives inside the Andromeda constellation.
So thanks again for listening. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Roy. And we hope that you're able to find all these objects in the nighttime sky.
Be sure to check out our website at
observatory.umbc.edu.
For space.